This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
We learn from nature. So the way that nature treats this nitrogen imbalance is by creating a microbial community that captures this nitrogen and creates new protein.
This week on Sea Change Radio, we take a dip into the archives to learn about two companies trying to get seafood to the market in unusual new ways. First, we speak with Daniel Rusick, the founder and CEO of Ataraya, as he describes his company's shrimp box technology, an innovative approach to shrimp farming. Then we hear from Shannon Constantino Rausch, the former chief strategy officer at Finless Foods, a California-based startup that's hoping to bring cell-cultured seafood alternatives to your dinner plate. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Daniel Rusick. Daniel is the CEO and founder of Ataraya, and their product is called Shrimp Box. Daniel, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Hi, Alex. Happy to be here.
So first, why don't you explain the problem that a lot of consumers may not be aware of, which is the shrimping industry. And then let's dive into the solution that Shrimp Box, your product, is offering. So what's the problem with shrimp in general, Daniel?
So I think that the first problem with shrimp is that the market cannot get enough of it. Basically, it's the number one seafood product that in almost any country, both by volume and value, most notably by value. For instance, Americans spend 70% more money on shrimp than on the second place, which is salmon. So, and where you have, when you have a market that cannot get enough of anything, you have on the other side people that are willing to do anything to get it, right? So you have basically two options, which is one is wild catch. But the problem with shrimp is that they don't swim most of the time. What they do is that they walk. So they hang out on the seabed. And so the only way to get them is basically dragging net. No, so you need to drag the bottom of the ocean, where something between 50 to 90%, depending on who's counting, of the ocean life lives, no, or the ocean biomass live.
So the shrimp themselves might be wild caught, but then they may be catching some other extra stuff in these nets, which are damaging the ecosystem.
Yeah, the nice word for it is bycatch. So, and basically, shrimp wild catch is responsible for 50% of the global bycatch. And bycatch means, yes, killing something for the benefit of no one from the ocean. So, yeah, so that is the problem with traditional source, which is wild catch. And wild catch numbers are not going anywhere. We're not going to get another million kilograms from the ocean anytime. So then shrimp farming was developed, and it was developed in countries like Mexico and Ecuador that developed the technology early on. But then the problem is that the basically shrimp farms rely on a continuous water exchange with the ocean on a scale that is comparable to a 500,000 people city, for instance. The average shrimp farm in Mexico is considered to be 200 hectares or about 400 acres. And it has a continuous water exchange like a 500,000 people city.
Can you explain what you mean by water exchange?
Yes, it's basically, so have you ever had a fish tank in your house, after some time, if you get greedy and you put more hobby fish there, then they will start dying with their mouths to the surface. That's because of aeration, no? That's because of oxygen. So they basically take the oxygen through their gills. This is how they breathe. So but you put basically an air pump there, and it's, and problem solved, no? At least with the oxygen. But the second problem is more important. At least that was what gave me problem with my mom when I had a fish tank in my house, which is the water gets green. Why does it get green? Because shrimp and fish, they breathe through their gills, but they also metabolize. They get rid of nitrogen. And this is so they eat nitrogen in their protein, and they get rid of it through their gills. So in the form of ammonia. So this ammonia start building up, and the water gets green because ammonia is a fertilizer. So there are algae that are floating in the air, and this algae makes the water column green. So shrimp farmers, fish farmers, we don't care if the water gets green. The problem is that after a certain threshold, after a certain concentration, the ammonia becomes toxic. And this gives the shrimp or the fish something that is called the nitrogen syndrome. They cannot get rid of the ammonia, and they die.
So you need a healthy level of water exchange to keep whatever the marine life might be alive.
That's one strategy. Yes, that's a traditional strategy, dilution. So basically, in the case of the kid, it has a toilet to flush the water. And in the case of shrimp farming, it's basically the ocean. That's the ocean. So you are taking water from the ocean and discharging it at the same rate in order to keep your levels at the same to keep your water levels. And on the outflow, the problem is contamination. It's pollution. So and that water has organic matter, but also shrimp farmers. I'm sad to say that some of them they use traditional shrimp farmers. They use pesticides, for instance, because when they are filling their ponds, they are bringing in crustaceans, other kinds of crustaceans. So they add an insecticide to the water in order to kill the competition, because otherwise the feed conversion ratio goes up, no? Which is your most important cost. So they add toxins to kill competition from shrimp.
So then the result from these traditional shrimp farms can be dead zones in nearby ocean regions or inlets. The main problem is that the surrounding areas can get toxified.
It could be, yes, exactly. I don't think that there is sufficient data on this, on what has been the impact on the water outflows. I don't know anybody that is researching this, but what is really known is that in order to get this easy access to water, is the mangrove deforestation that this has caused. So instead of fighting or investing millions of dollars to create a structure that brings water from the open ocean, you're located by a lagoon. So that's what shrimp farming does. So mangrove forests are very efficient in terms of carbon capture, 5 times as efficient as any rainforest in the world. So in 50% of what we have lost in the world in terms of mangrove forests, which are also nurseries for the ocean, have been devastated by the traditional shrimp industry.
And what regions are these most prevalent? Both mangrove forests and shrimp farming?
Yeah, no, it's a good question because so there are many crustaceans and there are many shrimp species in the world, but there's really only one that has been properly domesticated. And by this, I mean that you can get actually a selective breeding out of them. So you get the broodstock from the ocean and you get the larvae, and those larvae can become your broodstock. Those are your F1s, F2, F3, blah, blah, blah. And after many generations, you have selective breeding. For the only species that this has been successfully made and there's an industry around it is Peneus vaname, Pacific white leg shrimp. And the native area of this species is from the Sinaloa, coast in the west coast of Mexico to Peru in the Pacific.
These are different than the Southeast Asian farming species, or they're the same?
They're the same. So basically, this is the shrimp that has been adopted everywhere in the world to grow shrimp. So in places where you have on this tropical region, you can get three cycles per year, and in places where you're outside of these temperatures, you can get one cycle a year.
So my father loves ruby red shrimp. He lives in New Orleans. These are not the kind of species then that can be farmed?
If they come from wild catch, most likely they are not. And if they come from the coast, from the Gulf Coast, yes, most likely they are not. So we have wild catch, and now we have the problems. We have shrimp farming, traditional shrimp farming, and now we know the problem. So, but I talked about the problem on the outflow of the water. So the problem on the outflow of the water is pollution. And in order to set the farms, you need to destroy habitats. But then on the water on the inlet of the water, the problem is financial, because then you get disease. So a typical shrimp farm doesn't have any way to control the quality of their water. So disease come in to your pond, and you cannot control it. So then the question of this industry, if you own a farm, is not if, but it's when you're gonna have the existential threat of disease coming at your door and destroying 50 to 70% of your production on any given year.
And then it becomes a cost-benefit analysis of, is it worth putting this harsher insecticide to kill whatever the disease might be, or cutting costs? Or it sounds like there could be a very slippery slope for a farmer to try to save their crop.
Exactly. And then so they start using antibiotics, which in reality, I've been farming shrimp for 12 years, and I don't see any real benefit on antibiotics for shrimp farming.
But that's largely prophylactic, right?
As prophylactic, exactly. And sometimes they use it as a reaction, but most of the disease that we are worried are viruses. So your antibiotic doesn't have any use for it.
And then we end up getting traces of that antibiotic in our diet that we're not maybe counting on.
Exactly. No, for sure you're not. So you can Google this and you can see scandals about this frequently. Yeah, that's the problem. In the quiet silence seconds on, a cluster of night jars sang songs out of tune. A bright light shone down from the moon, come down in time. I still hear her sing so clear in my ear, like it was today. Come down in time was the message.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio, and I'm speaking to Daniel Rusick. Daniel is the CEO and founder of Ataraya, and their product is Shrimp Box. So, Daniel, you've laid out the shrimp industry's issues. What is Shrimp Box doing to try to address some of the shortcomings that we've seen up till now?
So, Shrimp Box is a way to, it's basically a technology to enable local, sustainable, and affordable shrimp anywhere in the world. So it's basically enables anybody to grow shrimp in urban settings, in semi-urban settings. So the reason why, it's because of the most important technology advance of this is the zero water discharge that is made in a replicable way, in an accessible way, so that you don't need PhDs on your farm to run it. You basically rely on engineering software that encodes these biotech protocols that we have learned for 10 years, and a remote monitoring from experts, from human experts that are advising you in case something goes wrong.
So explain the technology of Shrimp Box and why it's different from its predecessors. When you're trying to explain this to a shrimp farmer, what are some of the selling points? When does the light go off for them and they say, that's exactly what I'm looking for?
This is interesting because I'm considering, in my mind, I have two farmers. And the farmer that I care about is the would-be farmer, the would-be shrimp farmer in a country like the United States or places where you don't have shrimp farming, really. So in the United States, 95% of the shrimp that is consumed comes from abroad. So there's no industry in the United States. There's no shrimp farming industry in the United States. So for that farmer or would-be farmer, the important thing is that this is a product that is very easy to market. And we have worked for over 10 years in order to make this a reasonable investment that will give you a good margin so that you can have a good return on your investment, and you will have a great infrastructure and support so that you can thrive. So you're not by yourself. If you will have your baby shrimp, your post larvae, you'll have the inputs, you'll have the infrastructure, the maintenance, monitoring, and also if you needed the go-to-market, right? And we will partner with you so that you can be successful at raising shrimp.
I'm still trying to understand the scale and the technology itself and how it differs from traditional shrimp farms.
The most important innovation in this, or the most important difference, is that we don't need water discharge. We don't need water exchange. So we can put these shrimp box in landlocked areas. We can use any water. We can turn it into basically the chemical conditions that the shrimp needs. And we will reutilize that water many times over. So you won't need to spend a lot of money in creating the salt water, but also in keeping the heat of that water. So, and this we learned from basically, I know it sounds, but we learned from nature, because nature doesn't have this option of disposing nutrients in something that is no nature, and then basically have this dilution. No, so the way that nature treats this nitrogen imbalance is by creating a microbial community that captures this nitrogen and creates new protein. So, and this technology is called BioFlock. And this is basically how water bodies in the world maintain its balance, its nutrient balance. So we developed this technology to be applicable to shrimp farming. So this technology is old, or at least in theory, it's old. The understanding of microbial communities, it's old in this regard, but we applied it to shrimp farming. But then the cost of this biotech is complexity. So we turned these protocols into software.
It can't be added onto existing systems. You have to start fresh with a standalone shrimp box system. Is that correct?
Exactly. So basically we have solved everything, and the farm, whatever you need in the farm is already in the shrimp box. So all the infrastructure is already, it's there in the shrimp box. And then it has sensors and it has interactors that are connected to a cloud-based software that knows what to do. And it's basically orchestrating all of your production, but it's also telling us what you need. When will you need feed? When will you need your baby shrimp, and when your production will be ready to market?
Well, good luck. It's a terrific idea, and you've taught us a lot about the shrimp industry. Daniel Russick, thank you so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thank you very much, Alex.
I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Shannon Cosentino-Rausch. She is the Chief Strategy Officer for Finless Foods. Shannon, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
So explain what problems Finless Food is trying to address, and then we'll dive into your technology a little bit later in the discussion.
Yeah, thank you so much. So as you know, or maybe don't know, seafood consumption is at the highest it's ever been and only looking to increase. So all of the projections are up that there will be increased seafood demand in the future. This is for many reasons, from population growth to the fact that as income grows in middle income countries, the demand for protein increases. And so how are we supplying this demand? Right now, there are two primary sources, right? Wild capture seafood, so fish that comes from the ocean, and aquaculture. Well, wild capture seafood is leveling off. What that means is only 6% of our wild capture fisheries are underfished, meaning that we can take more from the ocean sustainably, and the rest are either overfished or maximally sustainably fished, meaning we can't take more from the ocean sustainably. In addition, there's aquaculture. And aquaculture, as you imagine, can either be farmed at sea or farmed on land now with the new innovations. And that is another source of supply. But aquaculture is also in its own rapid innovation cycle, meaning we're rapidly increasing protein conversion rates and how can we keep the fish healthy, et cetera. And there are not currently aquaculture systems that are closed cycle for species like tuna. And so that means that for species like tuna, the only way we can currently get them is from the ocean. So if you see, you can't see my hands, but if you saw my hands, you could see that we have a demand curve that's going up and we have a supply curve that's constrained by many factors. And so what are we going to do to meet that delta? And that's where you'll hear alternative seafood come in to the play. And that can be everything from plant-based seafood to cell-cultured seafood, which I'm here to talk about both today. And those are two forms of innovations that we're trying to use to create new sources of supply to meet that growing demand. In addition, I know you've mentioned this in other of your podcasts, Alex, and I want to bring it up here. The ocean is facing increased pressures from so many factors right now, more than ever in the past. One largest and the one that's probably talked about the most is climate change. That is not only increasing the temperatures of the ocean, which is affecting migratory fish stocks, but it also is triggering things like ocean acidification. In addition, there's marine pollution. So another popularly talked about, you know, subject right now is plastics and microplastics specifically. We also have historic environmental contaminants like mercury. And so in a world in which we're facing increased pressures on the ocean, how do we also continue to supply healthy and sustainable seafood? And I think that these new alternative technologies, both plant-based and cell-cultured seafood, also can address those challenges as well.
What are the biggest challenges on the plant-based? I know that plant-based seafood doesn't have the protein amounts that you would get from a wild catch seafood product, for example.
Yeah, I would say actually on the plant-based side, what's really cool is we have the technologies to produce today. And so we're able to scale. Also, the plant-based seafood space is so diverse in terms of technologies being used to produce these products that there's a range of benefits and nutritional comparability, from everything from nutritional comparability to even improved nutrition. It really depends on the company. It's really hard to kind of put a one-size-all approach. I would say that the thing that the plant-based industry is probably wrestling with the most is really just consumer adoption. And that's everything from getting the products into the hands of consumers, right? So thinking of food service and the gatekeeper that distribution is, to retail and getting it on the shelves, to everything from getting consumers to be willing to do that first trial, and then even more so doing the repeat purchase. And just getting consumers to even understand what is plant-based seafood, how is it made, what are the benefits, what's the problem statement that plant-based seafood is set to solve. I think that's where we really are in the industry, and that's probably more of the area that we need to improve on rather than just scale and price point.
And Finless Foods' product is mostly replicating tuna right now. You're not doing like a salmon or a halibut or something like that. Why don't you take us behind the scenes and walk us through the production process of your plant-based seafood, if you can.
So our plant-based tuna product is actually poke style, which means it's intended to be served and consumed raw. So used like you would in a spicy tuna roll or a poke bowl, or even a tuna flatbread pizza or taco. And so that means that our product is not intended to be cooked. I say that because it'll make more sense when I describe the under the hood. So when we've been developing this product, we really focused on our first product being minimally processed, short and easy to understand ingredient statement. And so what we did was we created a product that's hero ingredient is the winter melon. It's always fun. I get a ton of questions about winter melon because it's not something super commonly consumed in the United States, but it's more commonly consumed in sort of Asian cuisine. So we basically take this winter melon, we dice it up, we dehydrate it and stew it with flavoring like tamari and soy sauce. We HPP it for food for shelf life. And that's basically it. So things that you could imagine even doing in a home kitchen, right, per se, and then an industrialized kitchen. And that's why we often say that it's a minimally processed product. That's really important because in the plant-based space lately, there's been a lot of questions around, are these products as good for us? Are they highly processed? Are they high in sodium? And in fact, actually, our product is low in sodium. And so that was really important for us with this first product. Because its hero ingredient is a whole fruit, I learned that winter melon is a fruit, not a vegetable. It means that the product is not, it's not heroed by protein. And we're very transparent about that. And we talk about it often. On the flip side, winter melon is known as known to be a superfood in Asian cuisine. And so it's something that folks are really excited about, that our product is not only low in sodium and low in fat and low in cholesterol, but also has this hero superfood ingredient.
But it's also not like a part of a monoculture in terms of like wheat or soy or corn. Like, you're not seeing winter melon having a deleterious effect on soil, let's say, I'm assuming.
And we also get a lot of questions about it not being like soy, et cetera. And I think there's just this perception that plant-based products all include the same types of ingredients. And so there's this fascination in the fact that we've taken a different approach. I will say, though, that in the nutritional comparability, just like everyday products we consume, like granola bars or yogurt, right? All products are not created equally. And so I think the nutritional comparability really depends on the product. And so I wouldn't say it's safe to say no plant-based seafood products contain protein. Many do. Our first does not. But that's where we also say that it's complementary.
And it also doesn't have mercury in it. Things like these heavy metals that we find in dangerous levels at times in apex predators like tuna, right?
We talk about that a lot, that there's zero mercury. Yes, you're right. There is mercury in wild captured tuna. It's bioaccumulated. And so since it's higher on the food chain, the mercury is bioaccumulated to the top. It also doesn't have other environmental contaminants. Mercury is one, but also microplastics. And I know that that's something that's of increasing concern to folks, that we're finding microplastics in are literally everywhere, the air we breathe and the seafood we eat. And so obviously that is an issue with wild capture tuna as well. And that is, you know, another benefit to the plant-based as well as the cell-cultured products.
And maybe differentiate for consumers the difference between like pole line caught tuna and netted. If you have to go buy a canned tuna product, Shannon, what keywords are you looking for on the shelves?
Yeah, tuna is complicated. So for those of you just kind of not sure, my background is in an international ocean law and policy. I always focused on fisheries, and I always particularly focused on tuna. So Alex, your question is really, really apt. So there are various ways that tuna is caught. Pole and line is kind of what you would think of it as, a pole and a line, and you're catching one by one, one tuna by one tuna. The other ways are long line, which means there's literally a long line in the ocean stretched out with hooks separated at certain distances. And that type of fishing gear catches obviously tuna, but it also catches other bycatch, things that are attracted to the bait at the end of the hook.
Shannon Cosentino Rausch. Shannon, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thanks so much for having me.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise.
Additional music by Cadillac Jones and Sting.
Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.